Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Relationship Super Conference. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Ruth Schwartz, the author of Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love, the number one best-selling book in Amazon's LGBTQ relationship category, as well as seven other books. She's director of the Conscious Girlfriend Academy, a global resource which has helped support lesbians in over 25 countries in learning how to date wisely and love well. A lifelong student of love and mystery, Ruth's background also includes deep study in hypnotherapy, core shamanism, focusing, internal family systems, emotionally focused therapy, poetry, and mysticism. She lives in Northern California and works internationally. Dr. Ruth Schwartz, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Megan. I am really honored and touched to be part of this conference and super excited also to get to talk about the very specific experience of lesbians.
Fantastic. So I wanted to start with that all relationships have some universal truths, but I know that there are some things that make lesbian relationships unique. So what is lesbian dating like?
Well, thank you for asking that question. And before I say anything else about lesbian dating and relationships, I want to first say, I'm biased, obviously. I've been having relationships with women for 40 years. So I think lesbian relationships can be the absolute best relationships on the planet. And I think they take more skill. And I wanted to say both of those things together because we are a sexually marginalized community. And it feels so important to me that nothing I say be construed as pathologizing lesbians. I think we are the best. And I think we run into some very particular challenges all along the relationship life cycle, from dating to bonding to communication to sex to breaking up. So, lesbian dating is challenging for a number of reasons. One is that, it's hard to know what is nature and what is nurture, but women tend to be the ones who wait to be asked out, who wait for the other person to initiate. Now, obviously, in heterosexual relationships, if the guy is doing the initiating, that's not a problem. But if you have two women who are each waiting for the other to initiate, often nothing happens. It also can be really confusing to figure out what's a friend date and what's a date, because, if you have your friendship pool and your potential romantic pool are the same. And many lesbians are in the closet. Many are not obvious. And so there can be a lot of jockeying around to even figure out, okay, well, is this person even interested in women? Is this even a possibility? So those are additional level of challenge. Obviously, we have, many of us have a scarcity feeling that it's hard to find a potential candidate for dating who is both, shares our sexual orientation and then shares some of the other kinds of things we would be looking for. So there's all of that at the get-go. But I actually think the biggest problem that lesbians have with dating, and I hear this over and over and over, is lesbians just say, I don't date. I've never dated. And what happens instead is that we get in relationships really fast. So there's a joke, maybe you've heard, maybe not. What does a lesbian bring on the second date?
A U-Haul.
Yes, you do.
Which for our international audience is just a moving truck.
Yes, thank you. I have not literally ever done that. Most of the people I know have not literally done that. But I think what the joke gets at is emotionally, when there is a sense of spark and connection, often two women will dive right in. And, typically in heterosexual relationships, the woman might want to dive right in and the man is resisting. So you've got two women, often nobody's resisting, and we enter into this really magical state called limerence, which is a state of brain chemical high where we are stoned on these incredible endogenous opiates, and couples of all genders and orientations go into limerence. But what I have observed over and over is that two women together will go into limerence harder, faster, more intensely, and we've grown up on all the romantic myths in our culture And so when we go into limerence, we really think that means we have found the one. And that's why, you know, the U-Haul or the really rapid commitment. And it's such a magical state. I mean, and mystical, magical, spiritual, you know, incredible bonding. I heard one figure that said women have 150,000 more neurons devoted to bonding than men do. You know, because we're the ones that have to have the kids, raise the kids. But we also get all these extra bonding neurons that play out in our romantic relationships ecstatically. So lesbian limerence can be just a phenomenal experience. But then the brain chemicals wear off, because they do. They always do in limerence. And I liken it, I have a bottle of water here. You know, and I think if you had a straight couple or a gay male couple, and they had the same amount of water, the same amount of limerence to drink, they might drink it a lot more slowly. So I see statistics that say limerence lasts for 12 to 18 months. I have never seen limerence last for 12 to 18 months between lesbians. 3 months tops. Because we drink it really fast. You know, the thing that kills limerence is proximity. And we create a lot of proximity, a lot of bonding. You know, we will spend hours and hours, you know, talking, hours and hours cuddling, hours, you know, so it, again, it's ecstatic, but the problem is it doesn't set us off on the right foot for a stable relationship, because the minute we go into limerence, we stop assessing, if we ever even knew that we could assess, for real compatibility. Who is this person? What is their history? How does it line up with mine? What is their relationship vision? How does it line up with mine? You know, how are we even going to date? How much are we going to be in communication? Does dating mean we don't date other people? You know, like all of these questions that actually need to be asked to create a firm relationship foundation.
And long-term lasting love, right?
Absolutely. Typically get missed completely, because we've just gone into this brain chemistry high state. And felt like we found the perfect person. And so what I meet and in the community over and over is women who have had this experience, often numerous times, had these relationships that started out so amazing, then hit problems within a few months. So many relationships have lasted less than a year, started super intense and then got super hard. You've had that experience a number of times, you start thinking love isn't worth it, it never works, you know, what's all this hype about? And to me, that's tragic, because there is so much incredible possibility. Limerence is a time when we sense the incredible possibility that is real. We just, I'm educating lesbians, most of them have never heard of the word limerence. So they don't even know that this is a brain chemical phenomenon that will fool us if we don't know what we're dealing with.
And has addictive properties, right? Like all that oxytocin and all the endorphins, like it's addictive. You want more of it. It's like the limerence on light with lightning or a lighter fluid on it, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the first challenge with lesbians and dating, is that limerence takes us over, and we dive right in. And so a lot of what I try and educate women to do is, okay, see if there's water in the swimming pool before you dive right in. You know, like know yourself. And some of this is the relationship advice that couples of all genders and orientations need, of course. You know yourself, know what you're looking for, know what you're capable of, know what your vision is, know what the other person's vision is, you know what they're capable of, talk to them about their past relationships. All of that stuff does apply. It's just that I think it's even harder to do for us because of the scarcity, the difficulty initiating, and then the strength of the limerence.
And I can imagine a factor that might be at play too, and you tell me, is both cultural and geographical safety, right? Like if you're in an area that isn't like, I know you live in Northern California. But if you're in a country or just a region where it might be really hard to find people, other lesbians,
I mean, absolutely.
We have online dating now. That's great. But like, if you're out and you're in friend groups and all of the ambiguity that you were naming earlier, and just a plain, you know, kind of safety issue to put into play of how, kind of grasping it might be when you find somebody that you feel all that limitance
with.
Limerence.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I'm actually speaking mostly about the struggles of women in the West, you know, in more major cities who have more relative freedom to even claim a lesbian identity. Then we face these challenges. So actually, absolutely, in the situations you're talking about where there isn't that freedom, it's just like you meet one person and that's the only person that is available to you.
Yeah.
And you're having a relationship in secret, which of course makes things, and you know, you're terrified of people finding out maybe and being shunned and losing your job. And, you know, these are not the conditions that make for healthy relationships.
It might even create a small sense of like trauma bonding, right? Like we share a secret.
Oh, absolutely.
We've got this thing that we're both holding on to and trying to protect each other. I'm thinking also of a very soul friend of mine who got into a lesbian relationship at the beginning of 2020. And then we all went into lockdown, right? Which also creates a lot of intensity and, you know, cohabitation and like forced togetherness.
Right.
You can't even get out in the world. And I'm
right.
sure that you can imagine how that ended. And so actually I want to touch on kind of the ends of lesbian relationships. If there's all that limerence at the beginning, is there a commonality to how relationships end in lesbian dating?
Absolutely. But if it's okay with you, I'd love to kind of go through the life cycle.
Please. And, yeah.
So there's the, you know, the dating or the connecting, because again, many lesbians say they've never dated. What is dating? I try to define it as a period of time where you're getting to know somebody in a number of different settings, ideally no more than once or twice a week. You know, if you're seeing them every day, is it really dating after a certain point? You know, and especially if you start being sexual or even sexualized, a lot of flirting, a lot of sexting, you know, many of us lesbians, and I think women in general, will tend to start to feel like, okay, this isn't dating. I'm no longer trying the person on. This is a relationship.
There's an intimacy ratcheting up, right? That you're like, oh, right. This feels like a relationship.
And for many women in general, and again, lesbians are women squared. Lesbian relationships have two women in them. You know, I think many women find that once sex enters the picture, there's a sense of bonding. There's a sense that this is my person. And so again, if you've got two women, that's, you know, both of them have that sense. So oftentimes, as soon as sex happens, it's like, okay, we're in a relationship now. We're in a committed monogamous relationship now, even if we've only known each other for a week or two or a night. So then you have all of the challenges. It's kind of like what you're talking about with your friend in lockdown, where all of a sudden, you know, you don't know this person well, but you're deeply together. So oftentimes, both because the limerence wears off, but also because fear sets in, and it is somewhat realistic fear, because really on an attachment level, what you have done is moved this other person into this primary place in your nervous system and brain. They have now a primary effect on your sense of well-being, because that's what we do with our intimate partners, and you don't even know this person. So it's natural to get scared. You have done something scary. And so then the triggers start to hit really fast. And as women, we tend to have much more complex emotional inner landscapes, which is wonderful and amazing and is part of why we can bond so much more deeply. You know, so again, I want to say lesbian relationships can be fantastically close and intimate and wonderful. And yet, if we don't have the skill to recognize when our emotions are coming up and our triggers are coming up, and we don't have the communication skill to speak about our needs and say no and ask for things and say, oh, wow, I suddenly realize I'm getting scared because this is moving so fast. I really, really like you. I really want to continue with this, but I really would, you know, for the health of building something strong long-term, I would like us to go more slowly. Those words seldom get uttered. And even if they do get uttered, often the person on the other side freaks out. I've done role plays of this in classes. And even when it's said really skillfully, a lot of times the other person is like, what? You don't want me? You know, so if I could give lesbians one piece of advice, it would be to slow things down. Just because when we slow down, and this is hard for me personally too, I'm also speaking to myself here. When we slow things down, we have a chance to actually build a stronger foundation. You actually are getting to know who this other person is, and you're getting to build trust that can only happen over time when you've had a number of different kinds of interactions. So, what often happens instead is we get in there really deep, really fast. We have all of this commitment and all of this bonding. And then when triggers start coming up, it's scary. And so lesbians typically go into these processing loops. There's this joke about lesbian processing, because we will talk and talk and talk for hours. But when you're talking in, as you know, an amygdala state or a triggered state, the talking doesn't actually get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's draining, it's exhausting. Both people feel like I'm trying as hard as I possibly can. I don't know what else I could be doing. There's a sense of, well, we've only been together 2 months, so we can't go to couples counseling. You're not supposed to need it after a month, 2 months, 3 months. I actually really like to change people's thinking about that. I think if you feel like there's a good possibility in this relationship and you're hitting hard times, I think it's great to get some help after a week, you know, get some help for the first date and beyond, because we really want to do this thing. The other thing is women are tremendously motivated to have intimate relationships. And so lesbians, again, are women squared. We have tremendous motivation and tremendous potential. We just need to do it in a way that works for us.
And I bet that's such a hard thing to learn in yourself, is just to slow down and trust that the other person's trigger of that is kind of their stuff to work out and work through. Mm-hmm. And that if they're ready to work that out and work through it and pursue something slowly with you, then that's a good sign, right? But if they're not, then you might not be kind of in the same spot. But I'm sure that your own triggers in trying to slow down and wanting to slow down, your own sense of scarcity or abandonment or loneliness or whatever it is that you want, whatever needs you want to get made or met, like companionship, heck, we all want that, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard just for yourself to say, I need to slow down. It's like your own self mantra. I need to slow down. I need to have patience. I need to make an agreement with this person that we're going to take things slow and be okay with the discomfort of that possible rejection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there is a lot of uncertainty. There is a lot of vulnerability in that process. So we've got the communication. We've got the bonding. Lesbians also have some particular sexual advantages and challenges. You know, studies really do show that women in lesbian relationships have more orgasms. So, you know, yay us.
Good for you. I do not find that hard to believe at all.
But there also are challenges. You know, often both women are survivors of sexual abuse, because so many women are, you know, and again, there can be these challenges with who initiates, and there can be ways that if not everything is clear and clean emotionally, that really tends to impact us sexually. And there can be, you know, the effects of misogyny and sexual shaming, and that we haven't been taught to learn our bodies and our sexuality. And, you know, so there is this phenomenon coined by a psychologist named Joanne Lulin back in the 80s, lesbian bed death, which is that, you know, oftentimes lesbians, like most people in a brand new relationship, start out, you know, super strong sparks, chemistry, you know, it's fantastic, it's amazing, but there can be a big drop off. So that's one of the other challenges. And in the Conscious Girlfriend Academy, I have a whole section on lesbian bad life. I have tons of videos, tons of content on this, as well as on all the dating stuff we're talking about, all the communication stuff we're talking about. I've really created a body of work there because I don't see anybody else doing it. And I hear from thousands of women all over the same struggles, the same challenges. So I'm really committed to helping us learn what we need to do, learn how to understand what happens, why it happens, and how we can make other things happen in all of this. So now we get to breakups. So, you know, you've heard about the dating challenges, the communication challenges, the attachment challenges, the sex challenges, the triggers. And often we have bonded with what I call lesbian super glue with the wrong person, just because we haven't slowed down and checked out what does this person want in their life? What are they capable of? So we can get to a point where one or both people realize this needs to end. Lesbian breakups can be excruciating because, again, of all this bonding. It's like we all have so many little fibers in our emotional being, and they've all connected. And so breakups are hard for everybody, of course. But I think for lesbians, often it can feel like, you know, feels like we're going to die. It feels impossible to imagine life without that person because they've become so central to our bodies and our nervous systems. And then if the relationship was maybe secret or stigmatized, if people aren't totally out of the closet, that adds another layer. And because our friends, we may have had all of our friends as part of our couple relationship, the breakup might also mean losing your whole friend community.
Yeah. And I imagine that the strength that you've talked about of the intensity and intimacy at the beginning is kind of matched in equal and opposite measure by the kind of the grief and the loss sensed at the end, I imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And women who have come out later in life, a lot of them contact me in the Conscious Girlfriend Academy, and they're maybe in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. They've had heterosexual relationships before. Then they get into a relationship with a woman. And at first, all the you know, blissful stuff I'm talking about, they're like, oh my God, I never knew a relationship could be like this. I never knew sex could be like this. I never knew I could have this much intimacy. And then I never knew it could be so hard. And then, you know, and then breakups really, I mean, and I've had breakups, of course, that have gotten me on my knees, you know, that level of pain. So I find it's helpful for women just to have all of this normalized. So at least they know, okay, this isn't just you. This is a phenomenon that tends to happen with women. It is more intense all along the way. And we have the potential to make that mean it's more wonderful all along the way. But if we don't know what we're dealing with and we don't show up with the skill, it can be a lot harder.
There's two sides to that, right? It's like the weight of responsibility taken off of you when you learn that you're just like everybody else and that this happens to everybody. And then also like, wait a minute, I'm just like everybody else. I thought it was unique, right? Like, you mean this happens to all lesbian relationships? Come on. And I'm so glad that you mentioned coming out at different stages in life. I have another good friend, a different person who's 50 and just came out of a 30-year heterosexual marriage and is like a newborn baby deer, a little wobbly legs, but knows it and is very much like, I literally have no idea what I'm doing. And so it's a scary time, right? When you got married as like an infant adult, as I like to call anybody in their early 20s, and then you're doing it basically all over again at a totally different stage of adult life, it's got to be totally intimidating.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot about shifting your identity and what does this mean about, you know, who you were and how you lived in the past and how do you learn what you need to know now? And yeah. Yeah. So I have a page on my website, which is coming out resources. So there's both articles, there's videos. I did a free class on this a couple months ago. So there's lots of help there. Yeah, there's a lot to say about that.
Good.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Good. And lots of resources, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would just say briefly now, one challenge that women who are coming out later in life encounter is that some longtime lesbians feel unsafe dating them because they feel like, well, you know, you just came out, you don't have experience with women. Am I going to be your experiment? Are you going to be willing to actually, you know, are you just trying this on or could you actually be a real potential partner for me? And there's a lot of pain on both sides because the women who are just coming out or who are bisexual or more sexually fluid or pansexual often feel like, wait a minute, I'm getting all of this mistrust directed at me that I don't deserve, which is actually true. But on the other hand, from the point of view of the longtime lesbian, they may have fallen in love numerous times with somebody that, you know, that went back into the closet or went back to men or wasn't really ready to make this leap in her identity, which is understandable, but can lead to a lot of pain. So I hear this a lot, you know, the pain on both sides of that equation. And I just like to help women who are just coming out or who are bisexual understand why that happens. This isn't personal. This doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. And fortunately, it is not a universal. A, you could get together with other women that are just coming out. B, there are some lesbians that don't have this particular fear. I also like to let lesbians know, you know, it's understandable if you do have this fear. And all human brains try and keep ourselves safe by organizing people into categories. But the truth is we actually don't stay safe that way. We need to look at who is actually in front of us and who is this person? What does she want? What are her capacities? Because a lesbian can fall in love with a lesbian and get their heart broken. A lesbian can fall in love with a newly out person and that person knows exactly what she wants and is really ready to have it. You know, so we need to really dive deeper into who the person is.
I'm so glad that you named that so explicitly, just our systems of keeping ourselves safe and that there's a purpose to that. And yet you can also just kind of look at the facts and be emotionally open and take each person as they are instead of kind of let your fears run what you're going to allow into your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we need to do that everywhere. I talk about surrogate markers in dating. Because, you know, we will think, okay, there's this class of people I can feel safe with, you know, okay, she's had long-term relationships in her past, or okay, she's done a bunch of therapy, or she has a Buddhist meditation practice, or she's, you know, this or that, she's been at her job a long time. You know, we use these surrogate markers and they often don't correlate. So a lot of what I talk about in the Conscious Dating and Love book, Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love, is how to actually assess somebody, which is different than judging, but it's assessing. Like, again, getting to know somebody over time. Who is she? How does she think about things? How does she talk about things? When she talks about her past relationships, how much does she understand about what part she played in whatever happened? How does she handle her emotions? How does she handle her stresses? You know, these are things obviously that all people need to be checking each other out on, but especially because lesbians tend to dive in so fast, we need to do a lot of assessing really fast before we dive in fast, or we need to slow down and do the assessing more slowly.
An assessment feels more, I'm seeing you for who you are and loving you as you show up, whereas judgment feels like I'm looking for safety red flags that I'm going to try to change to make me feel safe. Yeah, assessing is like, I see that you have a really flourishing career and you're really good at your job and you're not a great communicator with dating and asking for what mm-hmm. you want. Like there mm-hmm. can be different ways in which you have a lot of strengths and some weaknesses over here. And it doesn't mean that you're just because all of those little markers don't add up to 10 out of 10, doesn't mean that you're not a good candidate for a relationship, right?
Yeah, yeah. I read something that said we have to stop making dating a red flag scavenger hunt.
Right.
And I like that. But at the same time, we also have to stop falling in love with people's potential or with our fantasy about the potential between us, which is what limerence plunges us into.
Absolutely.
So it's a both and. But I have a few frameworks in the book that I've developed. One is the framework about what it actually is to be a catch. So, because I teach people, you have to both look for the right partner, learn how to recognize the right partner, and also learn how to be the right partner.
Mm.
So catch is a framework. I don't know, I could go through it now quickly, but it's compassionate towards self and other, aware of what you feel when you feel it, able to tolerate your feelings without blowing up, shutting down, or self-medicating, communicate without blame, self-blame, or defensiveness, and happy to learn and grow.
Oh, I'm glad that you named it. Thank God.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah. So that's the acronym. And all of us have some growth edges in that, right? But the more of those qualities you have, and the more of those qualities the other person you find has, the more the relationship will at least be able to be played out in a mature, respectful, loving way. Now, catch is not the same as compatibility, but they are crucial factors for just if you have compatibility, being able to make it work. Because lots of people can have all kinds of compatibility, but still have it be a train wreck.
Yes.
And I have been there. I speak from experience. I wasn't born knowing any of this stuff.
And you're like, nobody. I learned it through experience.
Nobody handed me a manual when I first came out 40 years ago.
I bet. Well, I'm glad that you can be the leader through your experience and knowledge and practice that you needed 40 years ago.
And I still do. You know, it is a lifelong journey, as you know.
Absolutely.
Having a growthful, healthy relationship. Is,
being a human being in relationship with other people, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So I have this one more framework that I've developed on compatibility, which actually some of my lesbian clients have said they're bringing to their straight friends, and their straight friends are finding it useful too.
Share it, please. Don't hold back.
So what I've come up with is these three levels of compatibility. And I think level three is actually the most important, and it's the one people don't tend to track for. So level one compatibility is just kind of having things in common, shared lifestyle, shared hobbies, shared political views, shared cultural background sometimes, you know, those things that just kind of make us feel like, okay, we get each other. That's something people often track for, and it can be really a helpful kind of compatibility to have. Level two compatibility is the rapport, the chemistry, what the French call the je ne sais quoi factor. You know, I don't know what it is, just want to be around this person, you know, the sparks. Again, we tend to track for that. And that, you know, obviously is a really super fun kind of compatibility to have. But level three is similar or compatible relationship vision and the skills to implement it. And this is what I see people often not even thinking about. They think, okay, we've got things in common and we've got the chemistry. That's all we need. And then it can turn out that you want really different things in life, or even if you want the same things in life, like let's say you both want, lots of women say, I want a relationship that is connected on the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical levels. Great, beautiful thing to want. Do you have the skills to have that? And I think that's where the Relationship Super Conference is, you know, there are so many talks that are all about that, really understanding what you want and what you need to be capable of to be able to create that. Because if you want deep emotional intimacy, you obviously have to know yourself really well. You have to be able to really communicate skillfully and work with your triggers. Or you can have the illusion of intimacy for a couple months and then it all falls apart. You think it was just the wrong person. So really is a clarification exercise and a skill building exercise.
I love all three of those kind of assessing levels of compatibility. And I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, but that level three is so often I find reflected in when you're talking to someone about their past relationships, if they have accountability and they know what their role was, then that's a great sign. If they have no accountability and every one of their exes is psycho, it's evidence to me that like,
absolutely.
Oh, you know what you want. You just don't have the skills yet to actually get it.
Absolutely. Well, and it's also tricky because I have found, I mean, that's an obvious one, relatively. But I have found that somebody can talk with a lot of self-awareness about their past relationships, but every single one of their partners left them. And it was like, well, this person was, you know, like she just needed something else in her life. And this other person just was really jealous. And this other person was this. And so there is a lot to drill deeper about, you know, not to critique or blame people, but just to really get curious. Because I have found that in my past, not so long ago past, I would hear people's stories like that. And I would think, oh, well, I can see you're totally amazing. We're going to break that pattern together. I am not going to leave you because I see how amazing you are. I don't know what was wrong with those other people. But the problem is that, as you know, we tend to repeat our patterns unless we each have done a lot of work to change them. And so I have learned now through painful experience that whatever she says her ex-girlfriends did, it is really likely that I'm going to do them too, even if I think I would never do that. Because we have these ways of maneuvering each other into position to repeat our patterns.
Absolutely, because that's what feels safe to us, right? That's how we're subconsciously establishing safety, is through kind of patterns and repeating family systems and, you know, all of our roles in previous relationships. We just play that out over and over and over again until we figure out how to break those cycles, don't we?
Yeah. Those are the scripts that we know. That's what's in our nervous systems. And, you know, this is all the work of the rest of the Relationship Super Conference. You know, there is so much potential and hope for actually creating different levels of attachment where we can help each other heal rather than just continuing to rewound each other. As long as we are catches and we are happy to learn and grow, I always say that the H is the most important, because if you have that, then you can learn everything else.
Absolutely. I love that. That's a perfect place for us to stop as well. Perfect bow. Dr. Schwartz, thank you very much for being with us. How can people find out more about you and your work?
Well, you can find Conscious Lesbian Dating on Love. You can have any bookstore order it or get it online from any bookseller. And ConsciousGirlfriendAcademy.com is the website. There are lots of free videos, free classes, and lots of live ongoing classes that you can join, and tons and tons and tons, like over 75 recorded classes. So you can really get a complete education about lesbian dating, relationships, and sex there.
Fantastic. Thanks again so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Megan. It was a pleasure.